This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert.
And welcome to Allegro Non Troppo, broadcast across the Community Radio Network. Tim Newton and Matt Kelly filling in for Adam and Peter, who are having a few weeks off. Now, wading through the papers and the catalogues yesterday, it reminded me that it's that time of the year when we think about dads. One particular article focused on some famous dads and their wish list. Now, some of the items on the top of their list included Apple MacBook Pro laptops, yep, Sony PlayStations, carbon fiber mountain bikes and spa baths. Now, it's expensive, apparently, to show your appreciation to dad these days. When I was a bit younger, a polyester necktie, a packet of fags or a box of hankies were about as good as it got. Total price, $10. Actually, does anybody still use hankies? I think hankies have sort of gone way out of style. Disease-carrying things they are. Yep, apparently things have changed. Now, added to the increasingly elaborate list for dads these days is a new baby. Not that too big an ask, unless, of course, you're a pair of potential dads in a loving long-term and presumably monogamous same-sex relationship. Today, the concept of gay adoption, especially with two dads, remains a moral, legal and logistical nightmare, not to mention expensive. But a few years ago, it was more so. Before we introduce our guests Lee Matthews and Tony Woods, let's hear a bit from the film Life of Brian that brings a little focus to the basic problem of two men having babies.
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies.
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Yeah, it's John Cleese and Eric Idle there from the Monty Python film Life of Brian. So with apparently no place for the fetus to gestate, what do Tony Wood and Lee Matthews do? They want kids, they're a loving couple, they have the motivation, and importantly, they have the resources. Welcome to Allegro Non Troppo, Tony and Lee, and Zan. Got the whole family here, bar one, we're missing Lucinda. What did you do?
Well, hi. I don't know if it's good morning, it's afternoon. Hi, Tim and Matt. We and Zan's here with us. Lucy's actually with her favourite auntie today on a sleepover, thank goodness. It just reminds us how easy it is with one child instead of two, but maybe we'll get onto that later on.
Sure.
We had our family through surrogacy, so we probably about 10 years ago now just started to get that paternal clock ticking, and saw a lot of our friends probably going who around about our age having children, and thought that, hey, that's wonderful for them. And these are mostly our straight friends, obviously, and yeah. Thought, well, hang on, how come we can't do that? We'd be terrific parents, and you know, kind of had that real urge about wanting to have children ourselves. And
knew it was going to be really hard.
Well, yeah, we didn't. I mean, 10 years ago, we just thought we'd just, you know, meet up a couple of lesbian friends and have some kind of co-parenting arrangement. And then we realised it was a lot harder than that because you've got to have this really close relationship and dynamic, and you've got to realise that that's got to be right for you. And ultimately, as we explored that and met a few people, and really some lovely people, we really recognised that that wasn't the goal that we wanted to achieve. We didn't want to be part-time parents. We want to be full-time carers and have our own kids to look after, nurture, and realising how difficult it would be to have to give them up on, you know, weekends or you know, whenever the primary carer wanted responsibility. So we then just explored the other options and really came quickly down to the surrogacy.
Can we just go through the mechanics? We're talking about a life here, but can we just go through the mechanics of how it actually happened? Who's the father? Who's the mother? How did it all happen?
Well, okay. Well, first of all, 10 years ago when we started looking at it, there was very little known about it. Whereas now, and I'm sure we'll get to this, it's much more mainstream, it's much more common at least. What happens is, you know, in the technical sense, you have a donor egg from a woman you either know or you can acquire eggs from an egg agency, would you believe? And then
I suppose you can find that on the internet.
You can do anything on the internet. But in the end, it does require some physical medical intervention, obviously, to do that. So we went through an agency in the US and to find a donor. And then you, of course, mix the sperm and you create an embryo. And it's a pretty simple IVF procedure.
Where did the sperm come from?
Well, it came from both of us. So we were able to mix our sperm and create embryos from that. And obviously, only one little swimmer gets there first.
So do you actually know who's the functional dad?
Functional dad, that's an interesting...
The scientific dad, let's say. Genetic
parent. We do, obviously, and we're probably the only ones who really officially know, probably in addition to some bureaucrats in the passport office or somewhere. But, we just don't tell anyone that issue. And frankly, it's never, ever been an issue, I don't think, Lee.
There's a whole range of reasons why a number of people don't declare whose sperm swam the fastest, whose sperm was used through an IVF process, etc. And primarily it's about our children and about making sure that everyone who comes into our lives treat us both equally as parents. We don't want to engage in conversations around, real dad kind of tags. Because it is a natural question that so many people either ask or think about, well, who's the real father? And the answer for that is really straightforward for us. We're both real fathers. Well, we're equal parents.
It's past thinking, isn't it?
Context. And this is where, and you can bring that right back to a whole range of families out there, whether they're families through co-parenting, step-parenting, through adoption, through foster care, through genetic parenting. There's a whole range of ways that families are created. And once you actually become a parent, it's irrelevant how whose egg or whose sperm was used.
But it's a natural question that people ask.
It is
ask.
A natural question, yes.
Some of my acquaintances at work might have said, they ask, who's the dad? I say, oh, no, we're both dead. But really, really, who's the dad? I say, no, really, we really are, both the dads. But it's a natural curiosity, I think, that we all have, because you look at a son, and you say, okay, well, who does he look like? And, is he going to be tall or short, or is he going to be blonde? And people look at eyes, and we do it as well with our friends who have had kids as surrogates.
Well, I can tell you, he's going to be tall.
Oh, well, that gives a little bit away. Maybe he's going to be smart too, I think, maybe. Anyway, but look, it's a natural curiosity. People want to know.
Sure.
And we kind of don't dismiss that, because it's at the beginning we were kind of saying, quite, righteous about it. Saying, well, it's none of your bloody business.
Yeah,
of course. But, now it's an understandable question that people ask. And we just say, look, of course, we're both dads, and it's not really a significant issue.
This is...
go on.
This is also an interesting conversation that we're having right now in front of our son. It's one that we've always thought will evolve, and we've always had these conversations throughout his life. He's now six, turning seven. And he's not really aware of genetics yet, but it's something that he'll fall through it's a conversation that he'll that will evolve with him as well.
Of course.
And it's an interesting point that some friends of ours make, which is that information is our children's.
Yes.
And there's a point where he will want to know, and he'll understand more about that, and we'll be very honest and open with him about that. But at the moment, it's sort of private information that belongs to him and his sister.
Well, coming up, Matt and I would like to talk to you about the bureaucracy, your return to Australia, and some of the hurdles you've had to jump over. The program is Allegro Non Troppo. Our guests in the studio, we've got Lee and Tony and Zan, and we're talking about, what at the time was a fairly unique and pioneering attempt to start a family. We had a quick talk just before the music about how the family came together. Now we're talking about coming into Australia. What on earth do immigration say to you when you march into Australia with a baby under your arms?
Didn't seem particularly surprising to anyone at the time. We just walked. We came in from the US, so our surrogacy arrangement was in the US. Alexander and Lucy were both born in Cedar Rapids in Iowa,
and a nice part of the world too.
Yeah, but in the middle of the winter, it's not the most engaging place, I've got to say. But it is, look, it's middle America and cornfield, literally cornfields everywhere. It's quite an amazing place. So, but it's close to Chicago, which is also a bit of a benefit. But we, when they were both born, they're American citizens because they acquired the citizenship of the country where they're born. And they then come in effectively into Australia on a tourist visa. And, you know, we're travelling in. The child is has a birth certificate, an American passport. They didn't have Australian passports yet when we brought them in, but that was just a matter of time because children obtain citizenship by descent of their parentage. So if one of their parents is an Australian citizen, they become an Australian citizen on application.
And to what extent were you the parents when you arrived back in Australia?
Well, how much time have we got on this show? Because, I mean, you know, family law really hasn't caught up to any extent. And even with the recent changes, at least in Victoria and some of the other states, it doesn't really address all of those issues. And even now, for the purposes of the Family Law Act, the question is whether we're parents or not. It's almost too difficult to resolve. But we were, under at least American law, parents, or at least the biological father was the father, and he was able to travel with our kids and bring them in on that basis, and they quickly obtained Australian citizenship and Australian passports, and now they travel around the world with us on their Australian passports, and if they go into the US or leave the US, they really should travel on their US passports on those occasions. But there's no rule about that. That's just the way that it's easier rather than have them arrested as terrorists or something when they come in and out.
Now, the mother, is it the same mother for both children, or how does that arrangement work?
Our surrogate Genoa gave birth to both our children, and the same egg donor, Monica, provided the eggs. We don't actually have a mother in our family. We have two dads and two kids.
Well, we have mothers, but our kids.
Yeah, and we don't call our surrogate a mother in any way. For us, mother is a very emotional term, and one that usually reflects a woman who's involved in children's lives in some way. Our surrogate is involved in our child's lives. They both know where they came from and how they were born, but she doesn't parent in any way. And for us, mum is very the tag of a woman who is parenting.
Yeah, well, and so when you set out with Zan initially, was the arrangement there that the surrogate would be the surrogate if you wanted subsequent children?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a very well-beaten path when we first started our plan to become parents.
Are you asking if you get a discount for two? Is that the question, Matt?
Not at all.
No, I get the question. And it was more about being guided by what our surrogacy agency told us. And they were very upfront in saying that our kids will not have a mum. And it was a bit of a surprise to us. I think most of us are raised by mums a lot of the time. Mums usually, and this is very general, usually take the nurturing, caring role in regards to who's parenting kids these days. And it was a bit of a shock to have someone turn around and say, oh no, your kids won't have mums. But we got our heads around it quite quickly. We want to and are parents in our own right. We're both males, so therefore we're dads.
Now, who plays mum? Who plays dad?
Well, we don't. We don't have those traditional roles.
I just define that. What's a mum and what's a dad? Tim, I just need to clarify that for us.
All right. Well, you're sort of throwing it back at me.
Well, I mean, I'm just raising it. I mean, there is... I mean, we have all these judgments, don't we? And in a sense that... And especially a lot of our straight friends still evolve their relationships into what we have, you know, from Leave It to Beaver, you know, when we were kids, some of us were kids at least, you know, would you know, the typical family. And that's really such, at least for us in our relationship, that is an outdated, it is a very historical kind of model, what a mother and father are.
All right, but you'd be wrong to suggest that it's a typical family. It is by far the most common family. 99.99999% of families in the world would have a baby born by a woman, and she would be the mother, whether she is the mother in practice or the mother in science.
Well, a woman who is a parent is a mother.
They're both
what
parents.
Are you referring to there?
Okay, well, I don't want to get too much into the definitions, although I suppose that's what we're talking about.
Come on, yeah, Tim, yeah. Defend yourself. Now,
well, happy to defend myself here. And I suppose what I'm trying to do here is I'm putting on the hat of a group, something like the Australian Family Association, or a part of the community that would sort of see what you're doing is perhaps a bit strange, and some may even suggest it would be immoral what you're doing. So I suppose what I'm doing is putting the hat on from there and looking at it from their point of view. Now, as it happened, I do a conference each year for maternal and child health nurses. And without fault, 100% of them are completely, to use the want of a better term, anal, about breastfeeding. The child must be breastfed, otherwise it's doomed to failure. And these are rather stuffy women, in many cases, have very traditional values about bringing up children.
Yeah.
Now, what happened, say, to things like breastfeeding of your children?
Well, our children obviously weren't breastfed, although our surrogate did breastfeed for the first few days, and willingly did so. But after that, our kids were fed on formula, that would be the case with 95% of surrogacy births. Sometimes a surrogate will actually express milk, and we know of some people where she's done that for extended periods, six or up to 12 months, and there are milk banks and all that other stuff. And I agree that there's a lot of pressure on women to breastfeed, obviously, and some women can't, and most can. But that wasn't a big issue for us, and I suppose we were all, for better or worse, formula kids. Back in the time when I was a child, I know parents and mothers were encouraged to do it. But I'd like to go back to the broader issue about parenting and what's mothers, what a mother and what a father is, because it's true that the traditional role of a mother very much becomes, yes, the mother does give birth, no question. The mother does typically breastfeed, but after that, what evolves in a relationship is typically a primary carer relationship, and I think all of society is evolving much more quickly to adopting that as a relationship and kind of discarding the traditional roles that the mother made the house, took the kids to school, packed the lunches, all of that kind of, did the cleaning. And I think whilst that is probably a prevalent approach to parenting, even with our straight friends, I think that it's now become much more, I suppose, even driven by economics in a sense, that the primary carer will be the person who either has a desire to want to do that or through financial circumstances would do that.
Yeah, but it's okay to put this stuff on the table and make it happen. Indeed, you have. And the result, of course, is spectacular. But there are people out there, still probably a majority of Australians, that would find this difficult to get their heads around and would find it uncomfortable to even conceive this notion that you brought about here.
Which is one of the reasons why we participated in the documentaries to start with, and that we've done press like this, because it is about creating awareness. We understand that people think a certain way and are guided by a range of traditions. Well, and tradition doesn't equate to best practice. I know that's a very clinical term or business term, but there are a whole different ways that kids can be reared, that kids can be nurtured and cared for, guided through life. There's a whole different ways that a whole different range of ways that people can parent and can participate as parents. And ours is certainly an unusual model. It's not usual, but it's certainly not wrong.
Right, we've got Lee and Tony and we've got Zan in the studio. I've got heaps more to talk about. This is Allegro Non Troppo and you're listening to it on the Community Radio Network.
Allegro Non Troppo is produced at radio station 3JOY and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Our guests are Lee and Tony, and most importantly, Zan. We're talking about, we're talking about fathers. We're talking about surrogacy. And just to lead on from what we were just talking about, we're going back to our Australian Family Association and some of the conservative thoughts in the country. They would say, it just ain't natural. You've got to have a mum and you've got to have a dad, and that's the way it's been for time immemorial. What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, where do you start? Yes, of course. I mean, but what's natural and what's not? Because we can do so many things through technology, And in the end, you look about parenting. Parenting is the most natural thing. How you acquire children is you know, put that to the side.
But take away the science, yeah. Take away the costs, take away the opportunities. You wouldn't be parents.
Yeah, true. Although we could, I mean, you know, having gay parents, for instance, has happened for thousands of years and through all kinds of arrangements. And there are, you know, thousands, I'd expect, of gay men who have had straight relationships who have become parents and have either remained in those relationships or come out subsequently. And there are probably thousands of co-parenting arrangements and adoption and foster caring arrangements. And they're all novel relationships which have developed more or less in recent times. I suppose the question is, how are you a parent? Do you want to be a parent? And if you want to be a parent, then you feel that drive and desire. And to have a child and to nurture a child and to love a child is the most amazing, wonderful experience that you can possibly have. And in a sense, we're very lucky to be able to have that opportunity to have gone through it. But it's something that we would, speaking for myself, we would never want to forsake.
And I think that's a barrier that the extremists really can't get their head around, is that
using the word extremist is a bit extreme, though, because I think that would be probably the majority view.
Well, it's not. There's been a range of surveys, there's been a range of results published in the last year that have talked about huge percentages of the broader community who actually support us as same-sex attracted people, as same-sex attracted people in relationships, and as same-sex attracted people with families. And what a lot of people find really hard to accept is that just because we are attracted to people of the same sex doesn't mean we don't have a desire to have children. And often that's thrown up as, well, you know, you guys can't.
It's our lifestyle choice, and we've chosen not to have children. Yeah. And of course you don't. I mean, you don't get that choice, as we all know. I mean, you're born who you are, and your sexuality is inherent. And it doesn't mean you can't be a good parent or you don't want to be a parent.
Well, that's a whole other issue, I suppose, would take another whole hour to get through the nature or nurture issue. Let's have a talk about your submission to the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission that you did, early last year.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a lot in that submission that you felt you had been discriminated against. In 2009, what are still some of the moral or legal discriminations that still remain for people in your situation?
Look, they're becoming fewer, and that's a wonderful thing, but they're still there. I think there are legal hurdles, but there are also social hurdles, and that's... On a day-to-day basis, we really don't experience much discrimination. We're now in the school system. Our daughter Lucy is in three-year-old kinder. Zan is in prep. And on a day-to-day basis, we're treated equally in regards to our families, in regards to our parenting rights within those environments, even though, if it really comes down to it, we don't have a parenting order where many gay-led families, gay male or lesbian families, do have parenting orders now, and the family court is more supportive in regards to that. And we really do need those parenting orders to when it comes to situations around medical care or hospitalisation or sometimes even the signing of certain forms.
Yeah, is that an issue? Like you said earlier, that you're both dads and you present that way, but
yeah,
when you go to do an official form at some sort of bureaucracy, do they say no, you can't, or do they happily accept the two of you to sign?
Yeah, we haven't experienced a no, you can't. We have pushed back. We're quite forceful in when we present, and we empower ourselves, even if not legally, by having double barrel surnames. My surname is Matthews. Tony's is Wood. Our kids' surnames are Matthews Wood, and even that, on a simple bureaucratic form, is enough to get you over the line. So whether it's Tony or myself filling out a form, and our surnames sort of match our children's names, yeah, well, that's enough sometimes to get you past that. But in saying that, there's I've lost my train of thought.
Well,
now.
Can I just add to that? Having a supportive environment around you, you just avoid all of those problems. So, you know, apart from our friends, everyone at our work, my clients, you know, that I work with, or you know, Lee, where he studies, and parents, all the extended network is understanding and friendly, and that's not a problem. And everyone we've dealt with in an official capacity, whether it's the health nurse when our kids were born, or going into a hospital when our kids have been sick, doctors, absolutely everyone is so supportive of our relationship and our arrangement. Because, you know, Melbourne, or where we're from, is a cosmopolitan, advanced, forward-thinking, pretty liberal city. There are conservative elements, without doubt. Those people make a lot of noise. And, you know, when you talk about the Australian Family Association, you know, they punch way above their weight. I mean, they've got about, you know, minuscule membership, and they don't represent by any means the general view that I think Australians, even out in the burbs, kind of represent. And that's certainly, you know, even when we had our documentary on, it got a lot of coverage of, you know, 5 years or so ago.
That was Two Men and a Baby, followed by Two Men and Two Babies.
That was a good title. And, you know, just everywhere, I mean, it was on SBS, and of course not that many people watched it in the end, thousands did, but, you know, the people who would see you, and without you knowing them, they'd come up to you in the street, in the supermarket, and they'd stalk you, and they'd say, I saw that, and it brought me to tears, and my mother loved it. And, you know, I mean, obviously, Australians are not the kind of people who jump down on your throat and say, you know, you're going to go to hell, because that's not the Australian, that's more, you know, the fundamentalist approach, which we see in maybe in parts of the US. But having said that, it's really supportive, and you see everywhere we've gone, from our kids' school, you know, so supportive, so helpful in us trying to address, you know, for our kids when it's Mother's Day. What do? They come and approach us and say, look, we want to make sure your kids are supported on Mother's Day. How are we going to communicate this and so on? And
I have to ask, what happens at Mother's Day?
Well, we have special Women's Day. So what happens is you bring along and kids make something for their mothers. And in our case, they make something for the special women in their lives. And, you know, a lot of kids, for various reasons, don't have a mother, not just because they're born in surrogacy. And
with lots of aunts.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all about communicating that and understanding that the traditional paradigm doesn't always exist. And it's not just to accommodate us, but other kids in other circumstances.
And there is that. There is that thing in the having schools every time it's Christmas or Easter or something where, you know, you can't do it because of Christians or Muslims or religions, the predominant thing. And I guess, you know, Father's Day, Mother's Day is another one where people say, oh, we don't want to spoil the kids' fun. So I guess it's just a way of finding a way around that that's acceptable.
Right. In 2009, we'd have to say that there have been some huge leaps and bounds, certainly the last couple of years, in the legal area of gay relationships, same-sex relationships. What changes have there been in the way of legal moves to make your life a little bit easier? Has there been some... what are the remaining hurdles that you have to jump over to make your life a little bit easier? Or for future gay couples that want to adopt?
Oh, well, look, I think adoption is really the great big challenge that presents us, because in many respects, you know, full credit to the current government for having made so many of the changes to recognise the inherent discrimination and recognise the legitimacy on a level playing field of gay relationships.
I'm just going to interrupt. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but yep. There might be some extraneous noise from time to time. Zan's actually attempting to... transform the microphone.
Zan,
he's brought his transformers something? In. Would you like say something, Zan?
Would you say hi to everyone out there?
Hello.
Say it louder.
Hello.
That's good. And good. How old are you, Zan? Can you remember? I think you're 13.
Six.
Six? You look a lot older than six.
And are you in grade three?
Prep.
Now, correct. You have to learn in radio, you never ask questions if you can get a yes or no answer. So,
open-ended questions.
Anyway, that was Zan there. We didn't want to interrupt your train of thought, so let's continue on those final legal hurdles.
So I think in so many respects there is equality movement towards full equality, but, you know, we don't have it in respect of some of the key symbols, and, you know, obviously marriage is a key symbol, and in my relationship, for instance, we may not want to get married, we might not want to repeat the the formality, but to deny that and then to say, well, only certain people can get married, says something to our family, says something to our children, that their parents aren't equal, they're not regarded as an acceptable part of society. So I think that is one key, that's a It doesn't really mean anything in terms of substantive rights, but it does mean something in the symbolic way, and they're very important issues.
If in the next year the clouds sort of seem to part and the sun comes out and all the planets come into alignment, and for whatever reason we have gay marriage legal in this country, would you stroll down the aisle?
Look, I've got no desire to get married whatsoever, but it is a question that our kids have... Zan has certainly asked us, why aren't you married? I think our initial response was to say because there are people out there who don't want us to be married.
Well, the traditional answer out there is, oh, we get married for the kids.
Right, right.
But you're not traditional.
Yeah, far from traditional. And
the thing is, it's about the symbolism. So our next-door neighbours, who have wonderful people, a straight couple, have got two kids who are in their teens, never got married. Everyone assumes they're married, and their kids probably don't even know whether they're married or not and don't care, because it's all about the fact that they can get married and they're regarded as a married couple at common law or whatever. We don't have that same... foundation of our relationship, and I think that's sad. So Lee's right, whether we do or not is almost moot. It's whether we can.
Okay. Well, you can't at the moment, we know that.
And I think the other point, that this is more than symbolic, is the issue of adoption. And the government tells us, and adoption is primarily state law responsibility, but we can foster kids. What they typically, the symbolism behind that is, yeah, well, we need you gays to go out and, help us when we really need help with the problem kids. But in terms of being able to adopt, no, you're not really good enough for that. And there's all these kind of, problems and issues associated behind that. And I understand that governments might well be concerned about the view of, the broader populace on those things. But nevertheless, it's a substantive issue, and it's a real kick in the guts, I think, that you can't adopt as gay people.
Well, we're talking to Tony, Lee and Zan on Allegro Non Troppo. Coming up, we're going to have a talk about the options in 2009 for gay adoption and gay dads and surrogacy and things like that. This is the program broadcast on the Community Radio Network.